Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, West Ham United lift a trophy for the first time in 43 years, underlining the huge importance of the Europa Conference League. It means everything to their fans. They can't pass Fiorentina thanks to a last-minute goal from Jared Bowen. But what next for manager David Moyes and their talisman Declan Rice? We'll look ahead to the Champions League final between Manchester City and Inter Milan. What, if anything, can stop Pep Guardiola's side from completing the treble? We'll also discuss some transfer news as Jude Bellingham looks likely to go to Real Madrid. Will Harry Kane join him? We'll discuss Lionel Messi's prospective move to Inter Miami after he turned down his former club Barcelona. We'll also talk about Alexis McAllister's move from Brighton to Liverpool. This is The Game. Hello and welcome back to the Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wisencroft alongside Jonathan Northcroft out in Prague, as is Gregor Robertson. Ian Hawkey joins us from the continent as well. So we are dotted around, but at this time of year, as you would expect, finals are the priority. We'll look ahead to a big one in Istanbul shortly, but let's begin in the Czech Republic, where West Ham ended a 43-year wait for a major trophy and they won it in dramatic style as well. Jared Bowen scoring the last-minute goal that beat Fiorentina and won them the Europa Conference League. Who said this was a Mickey Mouse trophy? Who said it didn't mean anything to the fans? It meant absolutely everything to both sides, who gave everything. And in the end, much like most of this competition, Jonathan, West Ham managed to overpower their opposition in the end. Just an extra bit of nous or guile or speed, whatever it might have been, they managed to get over the edge. Massive for David Moyes and, of course, huge for West Ham United.
Yeah, Europa Conference League final. I was there. Never thought I'd be saying those words. What a brilliant tournament it has turned out to be. And the triumph, as you say, was kind of typical of West Ham's season in some ways. Not always pretty. Started off pretty badly. You feared for them at certain points. But what got them across the line, I think, was reserves of willpower, character, and then just a crucial little bit of quality which this team does possess. I mean, the ball from Lukaku was just sublime to execute that skill in the 90th. You know, a player who took a while to settle, but I think in recent weeks has shown why he is that Brazil starting midfielder. And Jared Bowen has been one of the emblems of the David Moyes era. You know, typical Moyes player, signed from Hull City in the Championship, played non-league football when he was younger, do fitness training on his uncle's potato field near Hereford, was out of the game. I mean, a real David Moyes underdog footballer to fit like that was very sort of fitting, really. And it's felt like a special couple of days here in Prague. The atmosphere in the old town the night before the game was building beautifully. Fans who are here for what is going to be one of the experiences of their lives. You know, the game itself had so much noise and colour from sets of fans and so much meaning to it. And you know, as we go back to it, this is a conference league. This is a competition that Brendan Rodgers sort of sniffly don't even know what it is when he wasn't in it, you know, when he was in the Europa League with Leicester. And it's acquired a special meaning and a special place in the, certainly in the hearts of West Ham fans already. You know, roll on the next instalment of the Europa Conference League.
Gregor, you were in the stadium as well. Only 19,500, and of course, lots made about the small crowd inside. But did it feel like more? Did it feel like a big European occasion?
Absolutely, it did. All that matters is that it really mattered to both of these teams and these clubs and their fans. That was absolutely strikingly clear. West Ham were in great voice, outstanding atmosphere. Fiorentina played the part as well. Their supporters behind the goal were fairly raucous for large swathes of the game, particularly after they equalised and it looked like it was all going to go wrong for West Ham. But I agree, it did feel like a big night, and I know that there's been, you know, discussions about the stadium choice, and I think UEFA will have learned from this. They didn't know how the competition was going to fare, and they've probably been surprised by the kind of the way that teams have embraced it. And I completely agree with Johnny as well. Anyone who's sniffy about this has kind of got their priorities completely wrong, because all that matters is it really mattered to them. And that was so clear. Jared Bowen spoke brilliantly after the game about his journey from Hereford in the conference to a very different conference now. And, you know, I was just thinking after the final whistle that every kind of cup competition, there's, you know, disparity of resources and quality, and, you know, there's always a sort of hierarchy and elite. And yes, the Premier League clubs are going to be at the top of it in this league, but and every cup competition is kind of reflected in these days in team selections. And West Ham were able to change their team in the early rounds, and Moyes balanced that very well. But when it got to the moments where they really needed to show up, and the victory against Manchester United, just reflected on that, was just the perfect timing before the semi-final came into view, kind of basically secured the Premier League status, and they were really able to focus on this competition. And from that moment forward, you could see the determination in this group to go and achieve something really special for them and the club, and there's no doubt it was special.
I'm sure one of you is in a hotel foyer and not actually riding a fairground carousel while we're doing the podcast, just in case anyone at home is slightly put off by the background noise. But Ian, look, just lastly on the game, let's take some kind of measure here, because we're going to talk a lot about Declan Rice. We're going to talk more about David Moyes and what this means for West Ham United as a club. But let's box off the game. Fiorentina may well argue that they were the better team. They had a great season. They fell in two cup finals, the Coppa Italia and the Europa Conference League as well. Their manager may well be leaving, some of their better players, who knows. But it was a valiant effort in the end. The game just didn't go in their direction.
Yes, I think probably the purist would say that they were the nicer watch of the two teams on the night. But, you know, that doesn't always win finals. Yeah, I think there is an idea that this team, which has, you know, has had a marvellous season in knockouts, as you say, might be broken up now and might lose some of its momentum. I imagine that Sofyan Amrabat will move on. He wants to. He had a terrific World Cup. Although I think he was, he was slightly at fault, wasn't he, with the goal at the end. He missed his tackle, which is unusual. And I think it was probably outshone by Declan Rice in that particular position. And, you know, there's a general thing. This, you know, we've got three Italian teams in the three finals. So there's a sense that Serie A is back in a way. I think probably the likelihood is that the Italian teams in all the European finals will all be silver medalists in those European finals, which also shows that Serie A is not quite back to where it used to be 30 years ago. But a great adventure for Fiorentina.
Well, I've got to say, it was sad for Fiorentina. They put in absolutely everything, but it was a huge, huge positive, and I think a massive lift for the Europa League, particularly in England, to see West Ham United lift it. I think it gives the opportunity for other clubs to lift trophies and have those special moments, as you spoke about, Johnny. But it was great to see David Moyes, the way that he celebrated the goal, the way that he was able to put a medal round his dad's neck at the end of the game after so much criticism throughout the season. And I know you wrote about him in the Sunday Times at the weekend as well, about him as a character and where he's come from. You know, that is all very important, but every single West Ham United fan that I've spoken to is kind of giving David Moyes their, if you like, excited blessing to move on to pastures new. I just wonder whether you agree with that, really.
No, I don't really, Hugh. I mean, it's a look at any sort of relationship that he's got with some of the supporters. I think it tells us something about where we are with modern football fandom, really, where I wrote about it in a piece today that the game has become very image obsessed and when it comes to coaches. Probably because when you think of people like Pep Guardiola in particular, setting such a high bar where you've got a coach that's, you know, plays beautiful football and is charismatic and is a philosopher and all that kind of stuff. And I think in this age, fans want everything, quite frankly. And David Moyes is probably wouldn't mind me saying this, you know, a manager whose values are rooted in a different age, an age where Scottish coaches were great, where sense, pragmatism is important, where getting the job done, persevering, sticking in is important. And maybe these are unsexy values in the modern age, but I think it's only some West Ham fans who feel this that way. There's plenty of others who appreciate what he's done. And I must admit, a couple of months ago when there were banners asking for him to go and he was getting criticism from supporters and people singing Sacked in the Morning, you know, he is an admirer and someone that's known him for a long time, felt on his behalf pretty, I thought, you know, you should just leave. If they don't appreciate you, leave. But I think that just in the last few weeks, the most important thing for a manager is to feel that they have a team that represents them and that they can push and will respond to them. And he definitely feels that about West Ham. I think he feels that after a difficult season, it's ended the way where they've finally got all the bits in place and they're pointing in the right direction again. Things like Lucas Paquetá, who's taken a while to settle, now reveling in the number 10 role, Bowen being back on form, the defence finally having stability. He thinks he can go on and do more things with West Ham. And I think he will stay. He should stay. I think there will, as I say, you touch on, there will be some fans for whom they'll always want the whatever option they think is going to be more exciting or glamorous. I just say be careful what you wish for to those supporters. But I think the board appreciate. I think a greater number of supporters do appreciate him. And at 60, still got plenty of fire and appetite to go on and do things. And I think he can go and do all that with West Ham. But I know we're going to end up talking about Declan Rice soon, and that is the big, big for any West Ham manager, whether it's David or not, to solve going forward. But solve, and that's a team that can go on and achieve more.
Yeah, I know you haven't got long with us, Johnny, because you've got to go and hop on a flight. But listening to those West Ham fans, you know, I do feel some of it is a bit harsh, but only a little bit harsh. You know, lots have complained about the style of play. I think he started to get more out of individual players that he hadn't, the likes of Paqueta, and the attacking players started to click a little bit more towards the end of the season. I think Mikel Antonio and Declan Rice are going to be big issues to solve because Antonio, you know, fitness record hasn't been great, but also he makes such a big impact on the team when he is fit and playing compared to Gianluca Scamacca, for example, who, yes, is injured at the moment, but the club outlaid a decent amount of money for. Will he be able to get more out of Scamacca? Will he be seen as a failure of a signing and move on in the summer? And then, of course, Rice is the big one. But you can imagine if West Ham do get the big fee that they're after, they might be able to get a decent replacement for him in that area. But I have kind of come round to the idea that they're an underperforming side. You know, winning this competition is fantastic. But even last night and throughout this competition, the games, I've been to plenty of the games, particularly at the London Stadium, throughout the campaign, you know, West Ham haven't played anywhere near their level. And certainly in the Premier League, they haven't. They lost 20 games. And, you know, I know you say be careful what you wish for, but I think there are some West Ham fans thinking, you know, could it be much worse? And I don't necessarily, you know, agree with that, but I do think there needs to be a big improvement. And whether David Moyes is given 10, 15 games to show that improvement at the start of the season, you kind of wonder, do they use this trophy instead to bring in someone new to take the club to, if you like, another level? And I'm not sure if there is another level for West Ham United, but there you go.
Well, I think you're applying these standards to, this is West Ham. This is not going to be a team that plays incredible football and wins and finishes in the top sort of 7 or 8 in the Premier League every year. That isn't possible for any club apart from the big seven. So you've got to be realistic. And I would say that yes, this season was disappointing because David did try and grow the style of play. It didn't work at the beginning of the year. But there were factors behind that. Agard, who's really important with his class at the back, was injured. Paqueta took time to settle it. And Scamacca looked like it might be a miss signing. And then you've got the decline, people like Antonio. And so there are actually football reasons. But at the end of this season, the team has won a European trophy, avoided relegation. It finished 6th and 7th the previous years. Now, I get that there's a possible progression where West Ham do play amazing football and still succeed and still win stuff. But I would ask, is that not a West Ham who has suddenly gone to a different financial level? It's only the big clubs that can have it all. The other clubs have got to cut their cloth. Everyone thinks Brighton have had an amazing season. Brighton did have an amazing season. Everyone thinks Villa had an amazing season under Emery. They did, but that's what West Ham did for the last 2 years. That's where they finished. And there'll be a time for Brighton, and there'll be a time for Brighton, and there'll be a time for Villa in a year or two's time where, because of the nature of modern football, if they haven't either somehow progressed from where they are now, we'll all be saying, well, they've stood still, because it's so unrelenting. We want teams to keep pushing forward all the time. And as I say, it's just not always possible. And I think that there's a manager there that's already taken West Ham to heights that they could never have imagined when he came in to save them from relegation twice. And I'd say fans should just enjoy it. But of course, that's not the way of things in the modern age.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, the final point I was going to make, but you made it, was, you know, if expectations have changed at West Ham United, it's been because of the efforts of David Moyes and what he's achieved. Now, 3 seasons in a row in European competition, 2 of those in the Europa League when he took over West Ham United in the midst of a relegation dogfight. I don't think any of us saw it come in, and I think he has to be given time off the back of that. But firmly in the camp of work to do. And I'm sure with his experience, they can make a big improvement this summer, because they will be now looking like one of those clubs that is attractive for players. So look, a brilliant night for David Moyes and his family. He spoke about how important a final is for any manager and lifting it. And he got that in the end. And for a brilliant career that he's had, hundreds of games, if not over 1,000 games, as a manager, and the clubs that he's been at, you know, he's done a brilliant job, and it is great to see him lift that trophy and kind of not be remembered, if you like, for that poor period at Manchester United. So, yeah, great night for David Moyes. Johnny, thank you for being with us. I know you got to dash off to get your flight. Gregor and Ian still with us. We're going to talk about, of course, Declan Rice next. Actually, before we get to Declan Rice, Gregor, what do you think about David Moyes' future? Which camp are you in? I mean, I'm being dragged by the West Ham fans towards the idea that this is the chance to bring in someone with fresher ideas, a better style of football. But then I'm also then clubbed over the head by what I said a few moments ago. I think expectation changes very quickly in football, and maybe the West Ham fans, with all due respect, are getting, you know, ahead of themselves a little bit.
I think that those feelings have undoubtedly been prevalent among the West Ham fan base until the last few weeks. I felt like following the semi-finals as well, when Moyes ran over to do an interview with BT Sport, just in the corner, kind of, it was a good 15-20 minutes after the semi-final second leg ended in Alkmaar, and the fans were all still there, and they were serenading him, singing his name. You thought it was quite jarring. You thought, this is not, you know, you wouldn't have imagined possibly seeing that like 6 weeks ago. And then again, before the game last night, I mean, the stadium was nearly full in the West Ham end, like an hour before kickoff. Moyes walked out and he got a huge, huge cheer. I think that, like, he has given them something that they haven't experienced, most of these fans, in their lifetime. Or if they have, it was, you know, 43 years ago. So I think that the conversation is really put to bed. I do. I think among certainly among the match going West Ham fans, I think they still have those sort of doubts about the future under Moyes in terms of a long-term future and the style of play and what they want West Ham to be. But he's already taken them, as Johnny said, somewhere that they never thought they would be. Or it was only, if they did, it was only in the wildest dreams. And it shouldn't be in the wildest dreams because their potential is enormous with the size of the stadium they have now and their fan base and some investment coming in from Kretinsky. They should be aspiring to greater things. But Moyes has already taken them certainly in a huge step towards that. And I think he'll be manager of West Ham next season.
But if Moyes is staying, and if there's a 99% chance that Moyes is staying, there's probably a 99% chance that Declan Rice is going. Speaking to our friends over at TalkSport and Jim White today, David Sullivan, the West Ham owner, has basically been speaking about Declan Rice, actually saying that it's cost him £10 million in wages to stay with West Ham, that he turned down £200,000 a week just over 18 months ago. He also said, and I think this is maybe even more important, that it is now time for Rice to go, that they cannot keep a player that doesn't want to be at the club. So maybe change that 99 to 100. But Ian, you know, as Declan Rice departs, he departs as a West Ham captain who lifted a European trophy. There could not have been a better and maybe more fitting end for him at the club.
Absolutely. I mean, he was, you know, he's been terrific in this competition. He's by all accounts a really excellent leader in, you know, in all the aspects of the job. And of course, he's still very, very young. And, you know, he's obviously genuinely very fond of the club and appreciative of everything they've given him. And, you know, it's a return to the great West Ham tradition of being, you know, of being developers of talent. And he's a wonderful figurehead for that. But yeah, I mean, he above all has to acknowledge what everybody else seems to think is that, you know, he is ready for bigger things. He really is. Just thinking of him compared with Amrabat last night, who is a very, very admired central midfielder. I think Declan Rice is a better footballer and will, you know, will grow into an even greater central midfielder. And I suspect he's going to make a wise choice of where to go next. And I think we probably all believe that that's just up the road somewhere in London and to Arsenal.
I don't know. Bayern Munich might test that mettle. We shall see. I thought Declan Rice, look, I think it's been a long, long goodbye, hasn't it? Has been way too good. And this is no disrespect to West Ham United. I'm sure their fans will agree with it, to be playing for a side that is struggling in relegation. I think a lot of the West Ham fans would feel that without him, they may well have been relegated this year, because he has still managed to be consistent in his performances and clearly is a leader on the pitch. And yeah, I thought it was fantastic to see him. It was a very tough position for him, having to answer all those questions about his future after the game. And fingers crossed for him, it can be resolved very, very quickly, whoever it might be. But he is an exceptional player. And I've wanted to see him at the biggest club possible. With respect to Arsenal, who are a huge football club, Bayern Munich, maybe on a slightly different level. Wherever he ends up next, I want to see him excel, because, look, we could talk about Jude Bellingham a little bit later on as well, and maybe Harry Kane too. You know, to see England players playing for huge European clubs is something that I do want to see, to be perfectly honest. And it's not all about the Premier League for me, as I'm sure most of you will agree. So wherever Declan Rice goes, he's going to be a fantastic player. And it was a great night. All in all, for West Ham, Gregor Rice leaving will leave a hole. Johnny alluded to it a little bit earlier on. You know, there are things for David Moyes to do to improve. Just finally on them, what do you see as the future being? Back in the Europa League, maybe with David Moyes in charge, almost certainly without Declan Rice in the team. Can they go from strength to strength here? Or I say strength to strength. They did lose 20 Premier League games, so relative strength to strength.
Well, they undoubtedly need to improve. Need to be much better in the Premier League next year if Moyes wants to keep his job. And, you know, another year of juggling the two competitions, Thursday night football and Sunday football, is going to be a challenge. And I think they do need recruits. I would say, like, clearly the hole left by Declan Rice is going to be almost impossible to fill. Not just in terms of his leadership on the pitch, but his character and his know, it's almost hard to imagine West Ham like as the same club without Declan Rice in the at the heart of the pitch. So that's going to be a huge issue for them, and also a goal scorer. I think, you know, Johnny alluded to it, seeing Paqueta kind of settle, he's actually brought out the best in the players around them too. Him and Benrahma linked up brilliantly last night in a few times in the first half, and they have done that in recent weeks quite well. You know, on the kind of counter attack as well, like moments where Paqueta finds a gap that no one else really sees, or that makes an exchange with Benrahma, and West Ham are off and on a counter. But even then, they don't really have anyone else with the. They have Bowen coming off the right, but they need someone else through the middle. That's a big area for them because they can't rely on Antonio, and I think Scamacca might well leave. So there are issues, undoubtedly there are issues, but the future for West Ham should be bright. As I said before, they're a huge club with a huge fan base in a kind of fast developing part of East London, and they have every right to think that they should be challenging and to be playing European football season after season.
Got the result in the end, got the trophy too. 43 years since the FA Cup in 1980. It's been a long wait for those West Ham United fans, and they lift a European trophy, a major trophy once again. And I'm not sure they're going to care about the performance at all. It was scruffy. I mean, they were not great on the night, to be perfectly honest. One thing to clear up, it was a slight annoyance for me. I didn't think the penalty was a handball, I have to say. Super slow motion. People are like, oh, he put his hand towards the ball. I mean, I think he was generally trying to shield where the ball was going from Jared Bowen. I think it was Baragi, the defender, puts his arm out. Ball comes off Bowen at, what, less than a yard, hits his fingertips. We've had a lot of controversial handballs of late. You know, that is one that I would say shouldn't have been given, to be perfectly honest. I didn't think it was a clear and obvious error either. I don't think it was a deliberate handball. You know,
the only thing is, you could argue that Bowen had gestured the ball across him, and without the hand essentially knocked the ball back to the goalkeeper. Yeah. So Bowen, I think, probably would have got across him and then would have an opportunity to score. So I completely agree with you. It wasn't a clear and obvious error. If I'm the defender, I'm absolutely gutted that that's given as a handball, because there's not much you can do about it. But West Ham lost and Bowen lost an advantage, so. It was one of those. See far too often now.
yeah. I think we'll leave it with there, because again, these ones are actually falling into the category of seen and given now. I mean, there's so many of them. So I don't think it's the big shock that maybe it would have been. But yeah, I think it's a tough one for the defender to take. It's a fortunate one for West Ham United, but they will take it. And they'll take the trophy back to East London as well. So we should see them parading that trophy in a couple of hours as we speak. If not, you're watching it as you listen to this, I imagine. Right, we're going to talk about another European final. I'm going to talk about some activity when it comes to transfers as well. Another English team heading off this time to Istanbul. Manchester City are next.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Manchester City are off to Istanbul. Pack your bags. City will be taking over. So will the Inter Milan fans, to be perfectly honest. And I want to say it's a mouth-watering Champions League final ahead of us. But one Manchester City fan so confident that he's already got the treble 2023 tattooed on the back of his calf, including the Champions League trophy. And, you know, I want to call the guy an idiot. But he's probably right, to be honest. He's just saved himself some time. There's going to be a backlog of Manchester City Champions League tattoos next week. Am I too presumptuous in that? I guess that's going to be the conversation, really, because, you know, I was thinking, do we delve into the tactics of Pep Guardiola? Well, I reckon I could name the 11 pretty much, bar possibly one player. And, you know, are City playing well enough to win? Well, of course they are. They're playing brilliantly, although they weren't at their absolute best against Manchester United. You almost think they can't put in two mediocre performances. And by the way, they still won the FA Cup final. And then you have to think about Inter Milan and what they might bring to the party. And maybe that is the only place where we can salvage this, because maybe they have been written off too soon. Maybe that's the conversation to have, because looking ahead to a game like this, it should be closer. I cannot remember a feeling going into the Champions League final that one side had it so far in their favour. And does that maybe count against it in terms of the excitement and maybe even the spectacle? Let's get into it. Ian, I'll start with you, because maybe the question of Inter Milan being written off is the biggest one. What do you think?
Yes, I mean, it looks a very, from this perspective, a very one-sided final, more one-sided than I can remember for quite a long time. But then again, I mean, I'm trying to think of clubs who might have reached a final against Manchester City at the moment where we wouldn't be saying something similar. They do seem so far ahead of everybody else. I'm pretty reconciled to their status. They quite like it. Pressure off, all that sort of thing. And, you know, they have been really effective in knockout competitions under Simone Inzaghi. So I think they will play very pragmatically. Hope that their strengths, and you know, they are a few, they're good set pieces, they've got quite a efficient counter-attacking strategy, can ambush City, and that, you know, that they can frustrate City for long enough that City lose some of their rhythm and lose some of their pretty impeccable control. They will have watched they have watched the FA Cup final and seen signs of sort of encouragement there, you know, that City can have slightly more mediocre days. But yeah, I'll be very surprised, and I would be surprised to see that gentleman having to erase his tattoo.
I don't want to make it a redundant conversation, to be perfectly honest. We can't call it a foregone conclusion, can we, Gregor? What in your eyes can stop Manchester City? Let's call it that, because it's not like they win every single game, virtually all of them, but not every single game. So the teams that have stopped them have managed to get the better of them. What do they do well?
There's not been that many recently. Well, in fairness, Brighton, in the way that they played with like real bravery, and you know, as they do so well, kind of invited the press and played through them. Look, Inter Milan aren't going to do that, but they did do something along those lines against AC Milan, in that they played really deep. The back three were getting on the ball kind of inside their own box, and they bypassed midfield essentially. But it wasn't like hoof forward balls. They played really incisive balls through the lines, or they kind of floated really good passes into Edinzeko. And I think that's probably going to form the basis of their tactical plan in the final too. They'll try and make the game bitty. They will try and win fouls. They will, as Ian said, try and win set pieces, and they pose a real threat from them. But they will also have to be content to sit deep and soak up pressure, and at times be brave enough to play those passes, or for someone like Bastoni to carry the ball out of defence. So that, you know, there's no such thing as a foregone conclusion in a final. It's, things can happen, players can make mistakes, so can officials. It looked that way in the Conference League final last night for a while, that West Ham weren't going to get any decisions, and you thought it's going to be one of those nights that those things can happen. It's just part of human nature and football. So it's certainly not a foregone conclusion, but clearly the way this conversation is framed is a result of Manchester City being clear favourites and the superior team. So it's just about them performing at their best on the day. And I do believe if they do that, they'll win.
Ian, help me out. Inter Milan at their best, will they hurt Manchester City, and who will?
Well, again, looking back to the semi-final against their neighbours, against a fairly young AC Milan team, they hurt them by going ahead so early and then doubling the lead so early. They did it via a set piece which wasn't properly marked. Now, all of this it could happen against Manchester City, who, you know, there will be nerves there. There'll be nerves there because of the exasperating history in this competition, the atmosphere and so on. So these scenarios could be repeated. I mean, I would be astonished to see City go goalless through 90 minutes. And then we have another problem. How, you know, can Inter score two or more? Difficult. But yeah, I mean, an early ambush. And as Gregor said, you know, if they can break up the play a lot, and you know, they've got some very savvy players to do that. If Nicolò Barella has a fantastic game and manages to run the midfield for periods, I don't think we can realistically say that Inter are going to run the midfield against Manchester City for the entirety of the game. But yeah, you know, it's moments. You know, these finals are very often settled on little moments. But yeah, it would require Inter, you know, 1 to 11 and off the bench to all perform to their absolute maximum, I think.
They also have an outstanding goalkeeper who I think has got the most clean sheets in the competition and, you know, produced a remarkable display against AC Milan. So we are stretching it, aren't we? We're trying to find reasons why Milan could win, but these are the reasons. And over the course of a 90-minute final, as Ian says, that's foisted with huge pressure, it's absolutely possible that Inter Milan pull off a shock.
We haven't even really contemplated it. I mean fans in England. I mean, it was billed kind of Manchester United's chance of beating them in the FA Cup final as the way to stop the treble, fans, you know, really writing off Inter Milan. And everyone knows that in the past, I've been critical of Pep Guardiola, possibly Manchester City as well, in terms of their mentality in these games and crumbling under the biggest moments, particularly in the Champions League. But you kind of feel now that they're at the end of a journey where they are absolutely the complete package now. I don't see the mentality being disturbed. The experience is obviously there. The disappointment, the need to avenge that, you know, everything leads towards them winning the Champions League. And even tactically, I don't think there is a tweak for Pep Guardiola to make to surprise Simone Inzaghi. And I don't think there is a tweak to make that could possibly improve his team. The only debate in my mind is whether Manuel Akanji or Nathan Ake starts. I mean, the rest of the 11 in my mind is absolutely set. And I think they'll cause damage. Even Erling Haaland being quite quiet in the FA Cup final is an ominous sign for me in terms of what he might produce this weekend. Because again, you can't really keep him quiet over 180 minutes of football. So I just don't see how Inter Milan do it. And we can talk about it on Monday, but it would be a treble and it would be a huge, I think, final point in the takeover, you know, the Abu Dhabi group's ownership of Manchester City, what they've been aiming for, standing on top of the mountain, not just in terms of European football, but with the treble, you know, doing something that Manchester City as a club still might not replicate for many more years, let alone other clubs in England. Yes, there have been trebles on the continent, but it's few and far between. And I think it's interesting because winning one Champions League alone won't put Manchester City in the conversation of great clubs, but winning the treble probably will. That's the magnitude of this final at the weekend and what winning it would be. So again, we can reflect on that on Monday if you like, but I want to give you guys a better preview. I want to say that there is something in here that makes me think Manchester City won't win. And I just can't see Inter Milan beating them. As solid as they are, defensively rigid as they've been, and the fact that they've been together mainly for a few seasons now, I think they have far more weaknesses than Manchester City. It's very clear. And who knows, we might all be stunned and Inter Milan might lift the Champions League, which would be huge for them. We'll talk about that context on Monday if they do it. But score predictions from this point, Ian?
3-1 City.
Gregor?
2-0 City.
Listen, we're going to stay basically with European competition, I think. Maybe reflect a little bit on Saudi Arabia, I guess. No, we're not going to be talking about golf, although maybe it plays a little bit of a part. We're seeing kind of some big names being linked to moves abroad. because of moves to Saudi Arabia, it kind of means that there will be possibly a transfer merry-go-round in Europe this summer. But I guess kicking it all off, Jude Bellingham agreeing a deal, if you like, the club's agreeing a fee for him, £88.5 million, could go up to 115 or so million with add-ons for a 19-year-old England midfielder who, of course, started at Birmingham, has been at Dortmund for the past couple of years and is on his way to the biggest club in the world. And it has to be marked, really, because if this were a movie, I don't think we could write it. I think the script writers at Goal couldn't have written this any better. I just almost can't believe just the career that he's having, just the trajectory that he's on, and possibly the player that he might become. But we still have to ask, really, is this the right move for Jude Bellingham, who was linked with a number of big clubs in the Premier League? There have been big names that have been eaten up and spat out by Real Madrid. Eden Hazard leaving the club this week after his move, which is well over £100 million as well. Is Jude Bellingham going to the right club in Real Madrid, Ian? What do you think?
Yes, I think we all know he's rigorous, studious individual, and so he will have made his list of pros and cons, and the pros are many. He's not frightened of playing outside England, clearly. He's been extraordinarily individually successful at Dortmund, being given leadership very, very young. So there's nothing at Real Madrid that should intimidate him. And he can look around the learnings that he can do there. But most likely Luka Modric is still around, who is a fantastic companion to have for a young midfielder. Toni Kroos will be around, and he will essentially be coming into their slipstream alongside several very young, talented midfielders from Fede Valverde, Edu Camavinga, Aurelien Tchouaméni. So, you know, that's a nice unit. It's peers to thrive with. And I would hope that he's had some sort of reassurance from the club that something resembling a centre forward might be arriving, who he can play off and serve. So, but yes, I think it's absolutely the right move. And he is so young that, you know, he can still forecast a Premier League career ahead if he wants to. Move to England at 23 or 24, if that's what he feels is going to be the right future step. Or, you know, he can become a Real Madrid icon in the way Luka Modric did. You know, Real Madrid will always be competing to the business end of the Champions League. They don't have the resources of some Premier League clubs, but they have the best access to resources of any club in Southern Europe. And yeah, I think, you know, he'll benefit from all the things you get when you play in Spain, a bit more time on the ball perhaps than he's used to. And yeah, I think it ticks all the right boxes.
Any downfall to this move, Gregor?
Certainly not for Jude Bellingham. It's extraordinary, as you've laid it out at the start, that a 19-year-old English midfielder is going to the biggest club really in the world, in Real Madrid, and also that in doing so, you have very, very little doubt or worry that you'll be able to handle it. He's like, I'm just kind of struggling to think of any player, said this during the World Cup, that I really can't think of any players with a mentality like Jude Bellingham at such a young age. Certainly not an English player, and I'm really struggling to think of many players at all. You know, the talent he has with the mentality he has, the kind of desire and ability to grab a game by the scruff of the neck, or haul his team, his club, his nation forward, the very highest level against the best opposition out there. And he did it. And I see no reason why he won't do it for Real Madrid. And as Ian said, he can absolutely still have a lengthy career in the Premier League. This is a huge opportunity. And it's another brave move. You know, he took a hugely brave move in going to Borussia Dortmund, and it turned out to be a fantastic decision for him. And this is another brave move in going to La Liga, going to the biggest club in the world, and believing that he can make an impact there. I kind of think he will.
Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to buy a Real Madrid shirt with Jude Bellingham on the back. Can't wait to see the resurgence of La Liga in this country and hopefully more people watching Spanish football, particularly if Harry Kane ends up there as well. So
Imagine. It would be box office stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, again, just underline the fact that there'd be two English, maybe you'd be able to tell me, when's the last time two English players played for
Real Madrid? Oh, okay. Yeah, yes, a famously fun era. When you had Beckham and Michael Owen, and let's not forget
Woodgate.
Jonathan Woodgate. Yes.
Okay, of course. That's sloppy of me. But not really, we're not forecasting the same impact this time, though, if that was to happen, would we?
Well, Michael Owen at Real Madrid was, we could go on all day with stories from that. That was a peculiar episode. David Beckham at Real Madrid was overall pretty successful. Interesting comparison. Michael Owen had, won the Ballon d'Or, but I think if you can sort of compare across ages, I'd say Bellingham Kane is maybe a slightly higher quality combination than Beckham Owen. I'll probably get shouted down for that. But
I would agree.
You'd agree, would you? Listen, Jude, as much as I love him, come on. He's got to go a little way now to come on. David Beckham. Just a little bit. I mean, I'm not going to say he's not going to be better than him by the end of his career. I mean, it is box office, and I'm sure we all want to see it. But I think Owen's comparable with Kane, to be perfectly honest. Goal scoring records, exceptional. Okay, Owen's body didn't last, of course. But then you got Bex, David Beckham. I think it's pretty equal. I'll be perfectly honest. I think it's pretty equal. But it would draw me to La Liga. I would be watching every Real Madrid game. The thing is, I'm kind of more of a Barcelona man, Ian. Always have been, it's down to my politics. But I thought they might have Lionel Messi, my favourite player of all time. He's on his way to Inter Miami, supposedly. Don't know how much truth there is in it. But to be perfectly honest, aside from whether Messi goes there or not, it seemed like he wanted to go back to Barcelona. We felt that maybe they could concoct something despite all of the financial troubles. One of the most hysterical things in Barcelona's history is a statement that has come out on a player who doesn't play for them moving to a club other than Barcelona. Quite stinging from Joan Laporta as well, to be perfectly honest. What did you make of it?
Well, there's been so much smoke and mirrors around Messi's supposed comeback to Barcelona. And we are now in a long blame game, which Lionel Messi really does not want to be involved in. He doesn't want to upset Barca fans because they love him and he loves them for all their history together. But I mean, how realistic this ever was from Barca's side, who was actually driving it, how much the fanfare around the possibility was a mission in itself without the genuine belief that it could happen, will all come out in the wash. But as Messi has pointed out, and as those people who are close to him have been clear for some time, Barcelona told him they couldn't afford him 2 years ago. They are under similar constraints now. So in a sense, nothing has really moved on. And he was genuinely in a position where, he liked the idea of it. He likes living in Barcelona. His family do, among other things. But he was being presented with a set of accounts which says so and so will have to leave. So and so will have to take a pay cut for us to make it viable for you to come back. Now that's quite a burden to put on somebody, and he was fed up with it and had lost belief that it was a realistic possibility. I think some surprise that he's chosen Florida rather than the enormous amount of money he was being offered to go to Saudi Arabia. But I think also he didn't really want to become a sideshow in the continuing Ronaldo versus Messi story. So yeah, I mean, I think we take at face value that his decision to go to Florida, which he's clear that that's where he wants to go, and unless there's some late turnaround in the terms, that is where he will go. Is based on family and
perhaps a lessening of chasing status in club football anymore. I mean, it's a big moment. It's a big moment. Lionel Messi will not play in a European competition again, which is, you know, it feels significant.
Just in case you think someone's at your door, there's work going on at Shea Hawkey, okay? Don't no one be disturbed by the banging in the background, all right? Very finally, it's one of the teammates of Lionel Messi, international teammates, Alexis McAllister, who we have to talk about next because he has been confirmed leaving Brighton, going to Liverpool. We believe his release clause was paid just £35 million for Jurgen Klopp to begin his midfield rebuild with a player of real quality. The question is, does Alexis McAllister, maybe not alone, but does he take a big step towards solving the issues and taking Liverpool back to where they have been in the not too distant past? Is he enough? Is he good enough? That's a question mark that I think a lot of fans have. As much as there's kind of a hype around him, you know, we've seen him for quite some time in the Premier League now. Neat, tidy, even high quality player, but yeah, still work to do for Jurgen Klopp to turn him into the kind of player that will win you the Premier League. That's my humble opinion. What do you think, Gregor?
Yeah, no, he's not on his own a player who's going to solve all Liverpool's woes, but he's certainly a very strong addition to the midfield. And I agree with you, he combines kind of craft and industry. He's very, very industrious and he's got a lovely touch and he's creative and, you know, he can create and score goals. But he's not the kind of dynamic midfielder that you would characterise, you know, Liverpool's midfield as, having been under Jurgen Klopp. He's not really of that ilk. So it will be interesting to see how he does. I think it's an excellent sign, particularly if that's true and that the figure is so low. It's an outstanding piece of business. But I agree with you. I have some question marks of whether he kind of is a natural fit in a kind of midfield engine room, which is just that for Liverpool. It's the lungs and legs, first and foremost. So it might point to a little bit more of a kind of evolution to Liverpool's play.
Do you agree, Ian?
Yeah, I do. But I also understand why there are question marks. It's been his ascent in English football, but you know, in his career has been really quite quick. He was a good player off the bench for Brighton not so long ago, and now, you know, he's a world champion. I mean, you can see why he appeals to Jurgen Klopp. As Gregor said, he has a lot of energy. He will press fiercely, and he has that creativity as well. Yeah, so I can see why he looks like a very good signing, particularly for that price, and why he would look at Liverpool and think, yeah, that's my sort of game. But yeah, he's not going to do it all on his own.
He's been given the number 10 shirt. No pressure, Alexis. Listen, I like it. I like this move a lot, particularly for the price. You know, Liverpool have spoken about the kind of, you know, we can't get Jude Bellingham because we can't spend silly money and we maybe need to be a little bit more frugal. You know, to begin this rebuild of the midfield with a £35 million player who can certainly deal with the Premier League and probably is going to be good enough to improve in the coming years to really be a great addition to your side is a fantastic piece of business. I am officially jealous of this move and look forward to seeing how it pans out for Alexis McAllister and Liverpool. But keen to see them add another couple, I have to say, because I think maybe not a rebuild and a complete overhaul of that midfield is probably what's most needed. And we'll see where it takes Liverpool next season. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to be with you. I'm kind of not looking forward to the next few days. I'm not even going to say I'm looking forward to the next podcast. I'll be there. Okay, I'll be there. But I don't want to be there. Unless Inter Milan win, of course, and then I will be there with bells on. We will see. Yes, Manchester City against Inter Milan, the Champions League final to come from Istanbul. You can follow all the coverage and all the build-up in the Times, and you'll get, of course, the reaction in the Sunday Times this weekend as well. So download the Times app. Make sure you're subscribed to that. You can also subscribe to the game online. It's thetimes.co.uk/thegame. We will see you on Monday. Fingers crossed. Hey, Man City fans, see you then.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.